Good evening. Welcome to Jazz Unlimited. My name is Dennis Owsley, and I'm here every Sunday night. And we are in the midst of our 8-part documentary on the jazz history of St. Louis. This is part 4, and it covers the 1950s and includes such things as the formation of the St. Louis Jazz Club, the DeBolivar Strip, the Blue Note Club in Centerville, Illinois, and Peacock Alley. And we'll hear music from the early careers of Oliver Nelson, Bob Graff, Emmett Blewett, Grant Green, and Sammy Gardner. And we'll have rare recordings from The Barrel and Leo's Five, and one by the Bob Graff, Grant Green Quartet at the Holy Barbarian on the DeBolivar Strip. So all of that and more are coming your way on Jazz Unlimited following NPR News.
Good evening. Before beginning tonight's show, we have to thank Singleton Palmer, Clark Terry, Charlie Manese, Jeff Leopold, Norman Minnie, Lee Hyde, Walter Dixon, Jim Wallace, Kevin Powell, Bill Bunkers, Kenny Rice, and Philip Wilson. The original Jazz History of St. Louis documentary was funded by a grant from the Missouri Arts Council and was copyright 1987 KWMU.
I'm Dennis Owsley, and you're listening to the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 4 on Jazz Unlimited. This week's show has to do with the 1950s.
Last week, we were not able to finish our discussion of Clark Terry's career. One of the things he's done over the years is lead a big band known as the Big Bad Band. And here is the Big Bad Blues with the Big Bad Band in 1976. Thank you. That was the Big Bad Blues with Clark Terry's Big Bad Band, and the soloists were Clark on trumpet, Ernie Wilkins on tenor, Ronnie Matthews piano, Victor Sproles bass, and Ed Soph on drums, and it was a 1976 recording. In addition to his trumpet playing, Clark Terry is known for his hilarious scat singing, and he calls that mumbles. It was first recorded in 1964 with Oscar Peterson, Ray Brown bass, and Ed Thigpen on drums.
You wanna get me, I said, you always are.
I'm Dennis Owsley. Thanks for being with me tonight on the Jazz History of St. Louis Part 4 on Jazz Unlimited. That was Clark Terry mumbling and playing trumpet with Oscar Peterson piano, Ray Brown bass, and Ed Thigpen on drums in 1964. In his long career, Clark has won many honors and awards, among them an honorary doctorate at Webster University in 2000. He's led a lot of small groups, big bands, and continues to bring the St. Louis trumpet tradition to the world. Clark is one of our national treasures.
Now we're going to hear some ragtime by Charlie Thompson, who was a winner of a ragtime contest against Tom Turpin in 1915. It's the Del Mar Rag, and he is accompanied by Bill McCall in this 1949 recording. Thank you. I'm Dennis Owsley, and we heard Del Mar Rag by pianist Charlie Thompson and drummer Bill McCall, recorded in 1949.
Drummer Lige Shaw was working as a piano tuner in the late 40s, and he was in U City tuning a piano for a lady by the name of Mary Ruth in May of 1949, and she asked him if he knew the older musicians in St. Louis and if they could get them together to see if they could revive some of the riverboat music. And Lige was president of the Black Musicians Union at the time, and he gave her a list, and she called every one of them and invited him to her house for a party. She didn't have any money to pay him, but they all came anyway on a Sunday afternoon, and she had barbecue, soft drinks, and booze, and they apparently played until 3 in the morning until the neighbors started complaining. Some of the initial musicians that came were Dewey Jackson, pianist Janie Hemingway, who played with Charles Kreth, trombonist John Bones Orange, who played with Jeter Pillars and George Hudson, clarinetist Norman Mason, who goes way back, and he recorded with Fate Marable. Lige Shaw played drums, and they had such a good time, they decided to do it once a month at a different house in University City. The only requirement was that it had to have a piano. This led eventually to Dixieland jam sessions at the Barrel on Del Mar on Sundays from 3 till 5:30 in the afternoon, and both black and white musicians were now involved. Pianist Barbara Sutton, Ralph Sutton's sister, trumpet Norman Murphy, and trombonist Sid Dawson were among them. Things got so popular that the Barrel had the band on every night for 5 weeks. Then they started to play Dixieland jam sessions on Sunday at the Universal Dance Studios on Del Mar. The fans paid a dollar and could bring their own bottles. Eventually, they moved the jam sessions to a boat called the Fort Gay that was docked at the foot of Harper Street on Sunday evenings. Singleton Palmer brought his tuba and joined Sutton, Murphy, Dawson, clarinetist Al Gishard, and Lige Shaw in a more or less permanent group. And then Bobby Swain, who was the music director for the Copler Hotels, asked Singleton Palmer to take a band into the snack bar at Forest Park Hotel, but he told him it couldn't be a mixed band, and the white musicians had to be let go. And Singleton Palmer remembers this incident.
As the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 4, continues on Jazz Unlimited.
I would play every Sunday over down Del Mar. In the meantime, this fellow named Gishard and Lige Shaw, it was me, Gishard, Lige Shaw. It was three blacks and three whites. I think Barbara Sutton on piano. I think Sid Dawson on trombone. And a trumpet player by the name of Russ. I can't think of his last name. Well, anyhow, we it got a little pretty tight group together, you know. And in the meantime, Bobby Swain called me from the Chase to know if I could get a band together for the Forest Park Hotel, which is a snack bar. And I told him, yeah. But after I called and named the personnel, he said he couldn't do that, you know, because it was back in those days, you know, integrated bands wasn't too much unless she was, you know, a great big shot or something. So then I got Dewey Jackson and Gus Perriman on piano and Robert Carter on trombone. So we went into the snack bar for 2 weeks and we stayed 8 months in there.
I'm Dennis Owsley. Thanks for being with me tonight on the Jazz History of St. Louis Part 4 on Jazz Unlimited.
That was Singleton Palmer remembering having to bow to segregation. The Singleton Palmer group recorded for the obscure disco label. The only tunes that were issued were Washington and Lee, Swing, and Tailgate Ramble. Bob and Vivian Oswald financed the recording and were founding members of the St. Louis Jazz Club. It started about a year after the Palmer recordings. Here is the Dixie Six with Tailgate Ramble, and Washington and Lee Swing.
Singleton Palmer plays bass on Tailgate Ramble and tuba, an amazing tuba solo on Washington and Lee Swing.
I'm going to go to the hospital.
You're listening to Jazz Unlimited, and this is the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 4. I'm Dennis Owsley. That was Washington and Lee Swing, preceded by Tailgate Ramble, done by the Singleton Palmer's Dixieland Six in 1950. The group was Dewey Jackson on trumpet, Bob Carter on trombone, Al Gishard on clarinet, Gus Perriman on piano, Singleton Palmer on both bass and tuba, and Lige Shaw on drums, and it was recorded on September 30th, 1950. And the St. Louis Jazz Club was formed about a year after the recordings. And we're going to hear Jeff Leopold, who was involved with the Jazz Club for many years, and Charlie Manese talking about the Jazz Club and the styles that were favored by the members of the club.
October 28th, it was, 1951. The people involved in starting it, of course, a lot of them have since passed away, but two of the most valuable original members, charter members, was Bob and Vivian Oswald. Lige Shaw, who used to be the drummer with Singleton Palmer, Helen Sankus. In the days that they began in 1951, there wasn't too much jazz. It was just before the revival, the West Coast jazz thing, and we didn't have very little jazz in St. Louis. They had, as a matter of fact, in the early days, we used to be referred to as the Singleton Palmer's Jazz Fan Club. But it wasn't true, but that's beside the point. We used Singleton a lot. They had the Dixie Stompers over at Jackovic's, and they had the Rick O'Connors and the Saints on the Strip. Sammy Gardner hadn't come along yet. They had the Mound City Jazz band was out at, I believe, at the Tropic or out on the Bolivar, but that was before Sammy Gardner. Sammy was playing with Joe Smith and his, I think he called them Riverboat Ramblers.
The Jazz Club, of course, was 51, and I remember well when it was formed, and the people who formed it, like Vivian and Bob Oswald, he was a professor of architecture at Washington U, and the Dorsey Roos and a good many others, they allowed themselves to form this club, and they called themselves the charter members. I was not a charter member, although they claim, although I was certainly one of the first members, and I certainly helped them get publicity in the media here at that time. And the club began to wind slowly, and after trying several meeting places, as I recall, they were up at the Hamilton Hotel on Hamilton in the basement there. They had some meetings at the Kingsway Hotel. I remember those very well. Other places before, they never did find a place that they could settle in full time, and I always regretted that.
You're listening to Jazz Unlimited, and this is the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 4. I'm Dennis Owsley. That was Jeff Leopold and Charlie Manese talking about the Jazz Club. There were a lot of St. Louis musicians who were charter members of the Jazz Club. Might be interesting to mention their names. Robert Carter, Skip Derringer, Wally Eckert, Marilyn and Betty Coppy, Charles Lambert, Harvey Langford, Norman Mason, Emil Nathan, Rick O'Connor, Singleton Palmer, William Reese, Vertna Saunders, Alexander Shaw, Lige Shaw, George Smith, Barbara Sutton, and Charles Thompson. One of the things that they did was they started producing concerts and events, and these events often featured racially mixed bands. They had a cruise called Jazz on the River on the Admiral for 7 years, and they put on a joint concert with the St. Louis Symphony and did a jazz at Vespers at Christ Church Cathedral. On July 27, 1958, they co-sponsored the first St. Louis Jazz Festival at Kiel Auditorium. The concert featured an all-star Dixieland band led by Singleton Palmer and a modern group led by John Cotter that featured Peanuts Whalum on tenor. For 6 or 7 years, the club did a jazz mass for Father Shockley at St. Bridget's Catholic Church. And at their high point, the club was responsible directly or indirectly for about 300 gigs a year for St. Louis Dixieland musicians.
They brought in Dixieland bands from all over the country and even from Europe. And today, the St. Louis Jazz Club continues and produces a monthly jazz concert. And the focus in the club has slowly changed from Dixieland and pre-1940s swing styles to basically a strictly Dixieland focus. Now, there was a record collector and music fan by the name of Bob Kester who was going to St. Louis U in 1950. He was taking business courses, and he began selling records he had obtained from secondhand stores out of his dorm room. He was obviously a hustler. Kester was a founding member of the Jazz Club, and through the St. Louis Jazz Club, Kester was able to get some promotion for his business. At the club meetings, he met a guy by the name of Ron Pfister, who collected 30s and 40s pop music and some jazz artists. And together, Pfister and Kester started K&F Sales and eventually started the Blue Note Record Shop. But soon they knew they were moving in different directions. Kester moved to a new location in Del Mar, and he started a record label, and he called it Del Mar Records. And he began recording Dixieland and blues groups by the time he was 21 years old. His first recording was the Windy City Six in July of 1953. Kester moved to Chicago in 1958 and later founded the Jazz Record Mart, which is a Chicago institution. The label name was changed to Delmark, probably over some copyright infringements. And Delmark and its co-label, Nessa Records, have recorded Chicago's finest musicians from traditional blues to avant-garde musicians of the Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians. That's the AACM.
I'm Dennis Owsley. Last week we heard Jimmy Forrest recording in St. Louis, and he spent time with the Duke Ellington Band in 1948. Part of that band's repertoire was the Deep South Suite, which featured a section called Happy-Go-Lucky Local. Forrest was back in St. Louis in the early 1950s recording for United while working part-time in a book and record store. And the United label was in Chicago. Music recorded by the United label was eventually re-released by Delmark. Forrest took the first strains of Happy-Go-Lucky Local and recorded them as Night Train, which is a tune, of course, favored by many ecdysiasts. That's a fancy name for strippers. Forrest had a long, late career as a soloist with the Count Basie Orchestra. His solo on Body and Soul showed many modern touches, and here is Charlie Manese talking about Jimmy Forrest, and then we will hear Night Train.
We had a marvelous little record store, Jazz Records, at Grand and Gravois. It was called Gaiman Appliance Company. It was the first store in town that had Commodore records and minor jazz labels. And anybody that lives through that era will remember the Gaiman Appliance Company. And one of the clerks there part-time was a fellow named Jimmy Forrest, who used to help out there.
Thank you.
I'm Dennis Owsley, and you're listening to the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 4. That was Night Train, recorded in 1951 in Chicago with Jimmy Forrest on tenor, Robert Bunky Parker on piano, John Mixon on bass, Oscar Oldham on drums, and Percy James on conga. Now, the DeBolivar Strip was an area south of Del Mar on DeBolivar. Clubs along Del Mar were also part of it. The Barrel and the Windermere Bar was in this area. By 1951, the Windermere had Joe Smith's Riverboat Ramblers with Sammy Gardner. Sorrento's was a popular spot for jam sessions, and according to Jeff Leopold, drummer Rick O'Connor's Saints worked at various places on the Strip during this period, as did the Dixie Stompers and the Mound City Jazz Band. The Top Hat and the Spa were other clubs on the DeBolivar Strip, and Little Nero's was there too. Trombonist Norman Menny was a professional by the age of 13, and he had a brother who was able to get him into the Barrel and played there.
Yeah, I was introduced to the DeBolivar Strip by, once again, like I say, by my brother Tom, who used to take me down there after our regular gigs were over. Then we used to go down there, and I think Sorrento's was one of the places we used to jam. And some of the other places, let me see, the Barrel, the Top Hat, and all interesting places. Very good, clean fun. There was really good entertainment, good players, good, clean fun. Extremely exciting to me at the time. Like I say, I was between 13 and 17 years old, and that was very exciting to me. But Bill Ruler's Barrel, I guess, was probably one of the neatest places. And they were just very entertaining, and it was just so neat, as I see it now in retrospect, that the fun and the excitement that was had was so clean and so good, and as were the players, such entertaining people.
The Barrel was a site of recordings made 1 week apart by Dewey Jackson and by Miles Davis and Jimmy Forrest in 1952. Here is Royal Garden Blues by the Dewey Jackson Group, and then Our Delight from Miles Davis and Jimmy Forrest. As the Jazz History of St. Louis continues...
Recording. Well, you better do it, you'll say anything. Thank you.
Jackson and his group in 1952. Jackson was the trumpeter, Sid Dawson trombone, Frank Chase clarinet, Don Ewell piano, and Booker T. Washington drums, and then R. Delight with Miles Davis trumpet, Jimmy Forrest on tenor, Charles Fox piano, John Mixon bass, Oscar Oldham on drums, and probably Percy James on conga. Miles Davis was interviewed by Harry Frost during his visit to St. Louis, and here is an excerpt from that interview. Note that Miles Davis's voice does not sound raspy. That was the result of a throat surgery in the late 1950s. The station break will follow the interview, and then we will start the second hour with Herb Drury talking about Jim Bolan and his time on the Devolver Strip. I'm Dennis Owsley, and this is part four of the Jazz History of St. Louis on Jazz Unlimited.
Rolf Erickson and the Swingin' Swedes, one called Miles Away, dedicated to Miles Davis, but it so happens that Miles is anything but Miles Away. He's sitting right here across the table from me. Miles, why don't you say hello?
Hello.
Yeah, hello. Miles, what do you say that we make a little historical thing out of this show tonight and delve a little into your background? Where were you born?
East St. Louis, Illinois.
Right across the river, huh?
Right.
So you're practically a St. Louis boy. Now, as I understand it, Miles, your father is a dentist.
Yeah, he's a doctor in East St. Louis.
Uh-huh. He's been practicing over there for about 20 years?
About 20.
And as I understand it, he's quite well-respected in the community of East St. Louis and has a wonderful practice. And it was only natural that in Miles' formative years that the elder Davis expected Miles to become a dentist. But when the turning point came, when the crossroads presented themselves, well, I think we'll let Miles tell it. What did your father say to you, Miles, about your future?
Well, everybody expected me to be a dentist. Well, he said, I told him that I wanted to go to Juilliard Institute.
Study music.
Mm-hmm. So he said, well, whatever you be a good one.
Yeah. Well, I think we can safely say that Miles Davis has become a pretty good trumpet player. Not only a trumpet player, but a composer, but we'll get into that a little later. So, Miles, you were in New York studying at Juilliard, and as the story goes, you went up to the Savoy Ballroom in Harlem one night and heard a couple of fellows named Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker. Now, how did those two boys affect you, your beliefs and your ideas about music?
Well, when I first heard them, they were here in St. Louis.
Was that right?
They were playing at the Riviera with Billy Eckstein.
Oh, Bird and Dizzy together. That was in 1944, wasn't it?
About 45.
Uh-huh.
And then I decided right there that I was going to New York so I could be around them.
Yeah, you dug what was happening, huh?